A key thing to understand is that the United States Constitution was created to protect property and not people. And corporations were not a popular entity at the time of the United States Revolutionary War and the Constitution, but within a few decades after that, they became an increasingly popular form of business. And the reason is because it provided the ruling class with an opportunity to protect their property.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, it's time for the Weekly Freak Show. Headlines and highlights for the week ending Sunday, October 7th, 2001. My name's the V-Man, and I'll be your host for this one-hour look back at the news and features not heard in or glanced over by the corporate-controlled media. On this week's program, I'll be speaking with Michael Franti, lead vocalist of the San Francisco-based musical collective Spearhead. And later, Freak Radio's Old Lady Scar Arms speaks with three members of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom about their campaign to challenge corporate personhood. Plus, this week's Spotlight Sound. Stand by for the Weekly Freak Show coming up next. Now, headlines for the week ending Sunday, October 7th, 2001. On Tuesday, October 5th, five activists on trial in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania were acquitted on charges of disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, obstructing justice, obstructing a highway, and conspiracy to obstruct a highway. The charges are related to a demonstration in the city at last year's Republican National Convention. On July 31st, 2000, the five engaged in a street theater demonstration wherein they enacted a massacre carried out by graduates of the controversial U.S. Army School of the Americas. During its 55-year history, the School of the Americas has trained over 60,000 Latin American soldiers. In December 2000, the SOA was closed down and reopened about 6 weeks later as the newly named Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. At the Columbus, Georgia school, the U.S. government continues to train hundreds of soldiers yearly in combat skills such as commando tactics, mine warfare, military intelligence, and psychological operations. SOA-trained troops return home to wage war against their own civilian populations. Hundreds of thousands of Latin Americans have been tortured, raped, assassinated, disappeared, massacred, and forced into refugee camps by those trained at the SOA. Activists are planning for a mass mobilization in mid-November at the Fort Benning, Georgia home of the School of the Americas. In its continuing efforts to log the last 1% of Oregon's oldest coastal forests, the Oregon Department of Forestry is cutting trees while nonviolent protesters are sitting in their branches. On Thursday, October 4th, Ridge, an activist with the Cascadia Forest Alliance, climbed into the branches of a tree outside of the small buffer zone in God's Valley in Clatsop County in the state of Oregon. Attempts to remove the young man were unsuccessful. The state's foresters then cut a segment out of the tree and told the protester they would cut the tree down if he did not come down from it. The activist would not come down and was forced to leap into the branches of a nearby tree to save his life as the other tree came crashing to the ground. Three members of the public were arrested as they attempted to witness and videotape the incident for the Independent Media Center. Sometime after nightfall, Ridge fell from some 90 feet from the tree. He is currently in intensive care at Emmanuel Hospital in Portland, dipping in and out of consciousness with a hemorrhaging brain, collapsed lung, injured arm, and two breaks in his pelvis. At about the same time that he fell, a local resident heard three gunshots coming from that direction. Literally adding insult to injury, loggers and Oregon Department of Forestry personnel apparently made fun of Ridge after his fall, calling him an amateur and twisting his injured arm. 16 more people were brutally arrested on Saturday, October 6th, when they crossed the closure boundary of the God's Valley timber sale. One indie media reporter was thrown to the ground, but immediately released when it was realized she was with the IMC. Activists who still have multiple tree sits in the area vow that protests will continue and identified a slate of four demands: immediately cancel the AC line timber sale, halt all current and future timber sales on state lands in the Oregon coastal range, drop all charges against people arrested protesting the AC line timber sale, and launch a third-party investigation into the negligent and unsafe behavior of the Oregon Department of Forestry and the Clatsop and Tillamook County Sheriffs for their handling of protesters. For the full story, check out the Portland Independent Media Center online at www.portland.indymedia.org. In a 4-3 decision on Friday, October 5th, the state of Georgia's highest court struck down that state's use of the electric chair for executions, saying the practice amounts to cruel and unusual punishment, a violation of the state's constitution. The majority ruling stated in part that electrocution, quote, inflicts purposeless physical violence and needless mutilation that makes no measurable contribution to accepted goals of punishment, end quote. Only two other states, Alabama and Nebraska, now use the electric chair as the sole method of execution. The state of Georgia has murdered 441 people in the electric chair since 1924, when it replaced hanging. As a result of Friday's ruling, Georgia will now continue state-sanctioned killings solely by means of lethal injection. And finally, on Sunday, October 7th, President George W. Bush announced that the U.S. and British forces began bombing Afghanistan in retaliation for the September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon. Early news reports indicate three Afghan cities, Kabul, Kandahar, and Jalalabad, had been targeted in the air raids. Official military claims are that only strategic targets, such as command and control facilities near the Afghan cities of Kabul and Kandahar, were targeted. Despite these claims, other reports from inside Afghanistan indicate a different story, as civilian airports apparently have been amongst the places targeted on Sunday. In addition to Kabul and Kandahar being bombed, other Afghan cities, such as Jalalabad, Konar, Herat, and Mazar-e-Sharif, were also bombed. Although U.S. officials have denied it, official Afghanistan reports claim that 25 civilians have already been reported dead. Critics of U.S. military intervention fear these attacks could result in a near genocide of Afghan refugees and political unrest in Pakistan. According to Amnesty International, several hundred thousand of those people have already fled their homes to avoid the impending bombing, with more refugees expected to attempt to get across the borders of Iran and Pakistan. Emergency protests were held throughout the world, with more than 10,000 people turning out in New York City. In Santa Cruz, California, about 150 people gathered at 2 p.m. on Sunday to urge a peaceful response to terrorism.
Patrick, how old are you?
10.
What do you think about U.S. military involvement right now in the Middle East?
Well, I think we should just get out of there because we've been supplying weapons in the Middle East for a long time and it's just time to stop.
Can you state your name?
Hank Milstein.
Hank, and are you with any groups right now today?
Well, I'm a member of the Communist Party USA.
What is the Communist Party's position on the U.S. military reaction and strikes right now today in Afghanistan?
Well, basically, we have said all along that war is not the answer to the terrorist attacks. We've said that any action to deal with terrorism, which does have to be dealt with, it is a serious problem, should be done internationally, should be done through the UN, which is precisely what the U.S. administration is refusing to do.
In the meantime, protests are being planned throughout the upcoming weeks, adding to the hundreds of global anti-war protests that have taken place in the days since the September 11th terrorist attacks. And those were headlines for the week ending Sunday, October 7th, 2001. Music and politics are two words which immediately spring to mind when trying to describe Michael Franti. His professional music career began in 1988 with the industrial noise groups The Beatniks and Disposable Heroes of Hip-Hopracy, and for the past 7 years, he's been the frontman of the San Francisco-based musical collective Spearhead, whose music consists of soulful choruses infused with hip-hop and jazz influences, as well as socially conscious lyrics, which address a wide array of issues from the death penalty and police brutality to homelessness and media reform. Spearhead's latest album, as our regular listeners are probably very familiar with, is titled Stay Human and was officially released in May 2001. Interspersed between the music are broadcasts from an imaginary pirate radio station, Stay Human Radio. One critic recently commented about the album, "It's music that moves your hips and your brain at the same time." I spoke with Michael Frani by telephone on the evening before the Mumia 911 show, a free concert in San Francisco to raise consciousness about the prison industrial complex. We discussed his music, activism, and his thoughts on the recent world events.
Michael, first question I have for you. As I said in the introduction, from the beginning, your music has been a vehicle for raising social and political issues. It appears that you're trying to find a balance between a political outlook and inner spiritual growth. How has that developed throughout the years for you?
Well, it's developed in pretty much just the way that you described it. My views on politics started out being very external. You know, it was kind of like, F the government because they're not responding to our needs. And in about 1993, I decided I wanted to write a song about the AIDS crisis. And the first song I wrote was like that. It was like, you know, F the system. You know, they're not responding. Realized what it was really about. I realized that it was about relationships, about my relationship with the friends that I had who had contracted the virus. It was about my relationship with my own lovers. It was about my relationship with drugs. It was about my relationship with the community at large. And so I wrote a song that was called Positive that was about my own experience of going to get tested for HIV and time that I waited thinking about how I would live my life if the test came back positive. And from that point, I started to really look to find metaphors for things that were taking place in the outside world. And now my music is aimed at helping other people through the music to bring out the emotions that they feel in their heart that are often locked away.
Spearhead's first couple of albums were put out on Capitol Records, and recently you started your own label called Boo Boo Wax Records.
Yep.
Can you talk about your motivations for this, and also tell us about the experience you had of starting your own label?
Well, I've been on all different types of labels. When we first started with the Beatniks, our first record we recorded ourselves. We ran out of money, and so we asked Jello Biafra over at Alternative Tentacles to put it out, and he did. And then we worked with Island Records, which is kind of a smaller major label, you know, well known for Bob Marley, U2, and Grace Jones, and others. And Records, which is like basically everything that is evil and wrong about the record industry. And what I found in my experiences doing labels at all levels is that there's some people who really care about music and love and will do anything they can to make sure that good music is heard, and there's other people who would just as soon be selling toilet paper or crack or used cars, and they just happen to be selling music. And so there's good people and there's bad people at all levels. And what I found out those is that with major labels, it's the economics of scale that really end up messing up artists more than it is people who are bad or evil or wrong or whatever. But major labels, by virtue of the fact that they are so huge, have to feed that beast. And in order to feed that beast, they rely on a handful of artists selling millions and millions of copies of records, and in order to do that, you have to spend millions and millions of dollars in promotion and video and tour support and whatnot, producers and photographers, to make that happen. And what happens is with most artists, they go into such a that they're never able to get out of it. And so when you do it yourself, you're limited by just the money and resources that you have to keep your costs down, and then sell your records at a price that's less than what you normally see them in the stores, and so you can undercut the major labels, but you can still make a decent return and not be so far in debt that you can't earn a living or at least make another record. And there's no independent record label really that's out there that makes money hand over fist and people getting rich off it, really. But there are some that are able to do it where they're able to put out good music and their artists are able to make another record. And that's what we hope to do with our label.
Aside from future Spearhead releases, do you plan on releasing any other artists on Boo Boo Wax?
At the moment, we're just limiting it to doing our stuff. And when I say our stuff, I mean Spearhead, my spoken word records, and some of the other members of Spearhead are doing individual projects. We're not really actively searching for outside artists, because I find that most of the time when I get a demo tape that's really good from somebody, my best advice to them is to start your own thing.
Right.
If there was really somebody who I felt I could help, I would. But I don't want to be... I don't really enjoy the business of putting out records as much as I do making records and being in our band. So I'm not trying to find 20 acts and hope that two are successful.
As I mentioned earlier, the title of your most recent album is Stay Human. As an artist with a large fan base, it must be hard for you sometimes to go about your day-to-day life. And I'm wondering, how have you balanced fame and recognition and still managed to, quote-unquote, stay human?
Well, I'm not that famous and recognized that it causes havoc in my life. You know, I have a really nice people who know my music, who recognize me, and who respect me for what I do and the things that they're friendly and just kind of like, hey, Michael, I like your music and I enjoy what you do. And, you know, I'm not like Michael Jackson or some Tom. Something where people are just mobbing me, so it's not over the top, but just in terms of living a life day to day in this world, it's hard for all of us to hold on to our humanity and to hold on to our dignity, to hold on to our compassion when we're bombarded with the messages that we are, messages of advertising that say materialism set your soul free and make you happy. The messages that say, you are a consumer, and the amount that you are able to consume is what your worth is to the world. And those make our soul ache and drive us crazy, So. I've found this, through meditation, through staying physically active, through speaking with friends, and through being aware of myself as much as possible and the tracks that I leave on the earth, that I can, pretty much maintain enough equilibrium that I can keep going with making music.
If you would, tell us a little bit about your family life. Do you have any children?
I've got two kids. I've got a son who's 14, and I just got back from his soccer game. We're driving in the car. He's eating some pizza. And I've got another son who's 2.5, who we're on our way home to see. I'm married to a beautiful, loving woman named Tara. And I feel really, really fortunate to be blessed with a loving family. Because I didn't grow up in one. I grew up in a family that had issues with alcohol abuse and rage and other forms of violence. And as I've grown, I've tried to be aware of those things in my life and within our family, and try to heal as much as I can to establish a loving family.
also been active in the movement to win freedom from Mumia Abu-Jamal. How did you first hear about the case, and why do you think it's important to speak out about Mumia's case?
Well, in 1994, we were doing a tour, and I went to Philadelphia, and someone handed me a videotape that was a documentary about Mumia, and I watched it on our tour bus. And since that time, I've been a big supporter of the freedom of Mumia. And well, the reason I feel it's so important to free Mumia is because he's not just somebody who's on death row who is there because he was framed, which he obviously was. He's there because of his political beliefs and because of his voice. And that's the reason behind why they have clamped down on him so hard. In fact, yesterday I heard a tape confession of the man who has now come forward who shot Officer Faulkner, which is a tape that we're going to be playing at our Mumia 911 concert and rally tomorrow in San Francisco. And the tape that will blow your mind. It's of a man who gives in intimate detail the story of the night of when Officer Faulkner was killed, how he and another man were hired by Philadelphia police officers to shoot one of their fellow police officers because Officer Faulkner was ready to squeal on them for their corruption. And so the tape is just mind-blowing. And it's a sworn affidavit. It's not just somebody who's talking BS. It's a sworn affidavit by this man, and it's going to be submitted as evidence in Mumia's case. And this leads up to what we're kind of talking about is tomorrow at San Francisco in Dolores Park. We're doing our annual Mumia 911 event, which is a day of art and consciousness and healing for Mumia and for his cause.
You were influential in the 911 events, which began in 1999. Can you tell us a little bit about how this day got started, how it all came together?
Pardon?
The 911 event, you were influential in starting this two years ago in 1999, and I'm just curious how this all came together, where this idea came from, and how it's worked out over the years.
Came together as a group of artists who decided that we wanted to draw attention to the emergency situation of Mumia, hence the name Mumia 911. And so we organized this International Day of Art. Artists around the world who are writers and poets and musicians, painters, created works of art on September 11th in 1999. And since then, September 11th has taken on a new meaning with these new World Trade Center attacks. So we're calling on all people to come out in support of Mumia, to learn about the prison industrial complex, and also against this beating drums for war.
You just mentioned the terrorist attacks of September 11th, just a few weeks ago. These stories have been dominating the news. We've been hearing about the military buildup in Afghanistan. I'm curious, what was your reaction when you first heard about this? And you know, being a father, how have you explained this to your kids?
Well, my first reaction was just, you know, to have the wind knocked out of me. I was on the way to the airport to go speak against the death penalty at the University of Mississippi in Alabama. Oh. And it was like, whoa, I can't even get on my plane now. And from there, I felt, you know, the same feelings that most people have had. A sense of sadness, a sense of grief, worry and concern about what our nation's government is going to be doing, and a sense of anger and outrage as I've seen Muslim and Arab people around the world be targeted as a result of this. And I think that it's really important right now that we hold on to our pain, our sadness, our worry, our confusion, and live with those feelings and be connected to our heart so that whatever movements that we make in the future will be guided by love and guided by compassion and not just by politics. and that we grieve when we grieve, not just for the people at the World Trade Center who were Americans, but recognize and understand that there were 62 nations that lost people in that Trade Center attack. It was the World Trade Center. And that we grieve for all the victims of bombings throughout the world and throughout history. And think about the loss of life. Think about the chaos of bombing. Think about the pain that it causes. And put an end to bombing and bring justice in the world so that we don't have this boomerang effect of our world policy occurring over and over again. You know what? I'm going to have to get going here now.
Yeah, I figured you're kind of busy. I just have one last question. Next Friday, you'll be Spearhead will be kicking off a 2-month international tour here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And in past tours, you've brought along poets, artists, and numerous people from activist organizations. Can you discuss the motivations behind this, and can we expect that this time around?
Yeah, we're going to be bringing Radioactive out with us, who's a great rapper and beatboxer. Everywhere we go, we organize activists in each community to be at those towns when we go there. And oftentimes, people end up traveling with us to more than one show. And now that this peace movement has began, we're calling on people to come out in peace. If you have organizations that are interested in getting involved, call our hotline at 415-865-2170 or check out our website, which is spearheadvibrations.com. This is Michael Franti from Spearhead, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Stand firm, hold the vibe, stay human.
Six above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take it to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground, another pirate station. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base, deep down, no precision. High crime treason, we broadcast in sedition. Like the Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition. Commandeering airwaves from unknown positions. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Don't take no prisoners if you can't afford to feed none. Don't start no fights if you cannot predict the outcome. Don't make donations where you cannot get your dough back. Fuck the apathetic bullshitters, send them all your Prozac. I will not climb into your telephone tree, and hell no, you cannot put me on hold. It's the same recorded message you've been singing all along. Keep handing us the Bible while you're walking off with all the gold. The bureaucratic office sends you merry-go-rounding, while the KKK police the streets by bloodhounding. Interest on the credit card just keeps on compounding, but the FCC can never shut this pirate sound down. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported.
Enfin que ta santé finale, tu t'allonges sous ton dos.
Yeah.
Tu es le divin. Tu te masques des bulles. Tu t'enfonces à ta
gueule.
C'est important.
disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. 6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, you're tuned to the Weekly Freak Show on Studio X, webcasting in Seattle, Washington at www.microradio.net/Studio X. Please have a pen and paper ready to take down our contact information at the end of this one-hour broadcast. That was Spearhead with this week's Spotlight Sound, listener-supported, from their recent release, Stay Human. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom was founded in 1915 during World War I to achieve, through peaceful means, world disarmament, full rights for women, racial and economic justice, an end to all forms of violence, and to establish those political, social, and psychological conditions which can assure peace, freedom, and justice for all. Challenging corporate power, asserting the people's rights, is one of WILF's three U.S. campaigns. Recently, Freak Radio's Old Lady Scararms was joined by Molly Morgan, Nadine Winslow, and Nachi Lala, three members of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. They discussed the newest leg of the campaign, Challenging Corporate Personhood. We first hear from Molly Morgan, who describes the initiative.
For the last couple of years, we've been focusing on local community education through a study program. And as a result of the work that we've been doing there, we have decided to focus on corporate personhood because it is so key and pivotal to the ways in which corporations have acquired so much power in the United States. And one of the main reasons for this is a Supreme Court decision that happened in 1886 called Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad. And in that decision, the Supreme Court simply unanimously declared, without hearing any arguments from either side, that it considered corporations to be persons deserving the law's protection. And from that point, corporations proceeded to acquire the same protections of people under most of the Bill of Rights protections in the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. And because of that, they've been able to do a lot of extraordinary things, like because they have First Amendment rights, they can participate in any ways they want to in our political process. Because they have protection against search and seizure, the EPA and OSHA cannot go onto corporate property without having a legal warrant, without having permission ahead of time. And if any people are concerned about pollution or employee mistreatment, we have to get legal permission to do that because corporate property trumps the rights of individual people. So we've been looking at that issue, and we really feel strongly that eliminating the rights of corporations to have the same legal status as persons, eradicating that, overturning that, is going to be very important to human beings getting back in control of their democracy.
As a local group, we've been concentrating for a couple of years on the campaign that started from our national office in Philadelphia, and the name of the campaign at that time, and still is actually, Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights. And our focus was on the democratic policy of participation in democracy. We've tried it on the local level in that we have had four study groups. We've educated a lot of our group. We also table periodically on this and other issues.
So that's some of what's going on locally. We have another guest who hasn't had a chance to speak yet, Nachilala. Is there something you'd like to say? And if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, please pronounce it again, because I'm pretty bad with it.
Okay, you're pronouncing my name just right. I would like to appeal to the people of Santa Cruz to support this campaign that we're working on now, because I think it's the missing link or a possible explanation to why corporations have got so much power over their daily lives. They dictate what they see on TV, what they eat, what sort of jobs are available. So it's really an opening, an opportunity for the locals here and for the people of the United States in general to get back their power, their sovereignty back.
So I hear that this is something that's important that we do. How can people take their power back from the corporations?
One of the things that's important is for people to become aware that corporate personhood exists in the first place. And a lot of people don't have a clue. And what our experience is that when we talk to them about it, they mostly kind of look at you funny and say, what are you talking about? Corporations are persons under the law. It doesn't make any kind of sense. So the first step is to make people aware of it. And it doesn't take an awful lot of effort after that for people to think, this is something that doesn't make any sense that we want to change. We think that we're at the very beginning of this campaign in terms of action, but we're excited about it because we see lots of opportunities for people to do creative things to make their friends and neighbors and coworkers and whoever else they can speak to aware of this as an issue. We think that there are lots of opportunities for creative signs for street theater, so there are ways we can communicate with people that way. Certainly through legal means, we want to pursue this as we go through the process of having communities pass resolutions, and the leader in that has been another community right here in the state of California, Point Arena, up in Mendocino County. Last April, passed a resolution opposing corporate personhood, and that was a way for them to both educate their community, get lots of people talking and thinking about democracy and what it means. And we believe that that's a great way for people to consider to continue to proceed in communities around the country. So that's a beginning.
If you could just explain corporate personhood again. It seems like I kind of want to get at the root of this. There is the belief by many activists that this is the root of a lot of problems, and that people are fighting all these causes. But if we could just take back our power, then we wouldn't have to fight on all these different issues. We could just focus on this one thing. Can you explain why people believe that? I mean, I've heard that, but why?
A key thing to understand is that the United States Constitution was created to protect property and not people. And corporations were not a popular entity at the time of the United States Revolutionary War and the Constitution, but within a few decades after that, they became an increasingly popular form of business. And the reason is because it provided the ruling class with an opportunity to protect their property, and certainly vast land holdings, buildings, crops, personal goods, and of course property in the form of slaves was a very, very important source of power and wealth at the beginning of the 19th century. And gradually over the decade, as decades passed, the wealthy started to put more and more of their power into corporations. After the Civil War, it shifted and grew very rapidly, and that was a time when the United States was growing very quickly in terms of land grabs and in terms of exploiting those lands through the railroads. And so the pivotal thing that happened with corporations was, as property of the wealthy, they needed to acquire rights. Corporations, as created, are chartered by state legislatures, which puts them in the government side. The government has duties to the people. And what the Supreme Court decision in 1886 did was shift corporations over to the people side of the equation, and people in the Constitution have rights that are protected in the first 10 amendments. So that's a that's one of the key things to understand, is how much property is part of the, it's really the main thing that undergirds the entire body of law in the United States. And so that's one of the reasons why people need to understand why personhood is important to undo, because it gives this fake power to corporations as fake people.
I've heard that corporations have more rights, corporate persons, they have more rights than we do. Is that true?
They do, in that they have all the same protections that we flesh and blood human beings do, but they're like superhumans, because corporations now have infinite lifespans. A couple of centuries ago, corporate charters were automatically terminated after 10 or 15 years, but the laws gradually change, so now they can live forever, which means that they can accumulate wealth and property and power for an unlimited period of time. You can do things like cut off an arm or a leg, figuratively speaking, or even a head of a corporation, and it still continues to exist. So it's like it has this superhuman status compared to regular people.
And what does this lead to? What is the result of this?
The result is that they have a lot more power than normal people do. Because they're able to accumulate property and wealth under an artificial entity that can continue to exist, normal people, people, flesh and blood people, can't do the same thing because they don't live forever.
Maybe Nachilala or Nadine, both of you, can answer why is this so bad? Why is the fact that corporations have power bad? So they have rights. What's wrong with that?
Well, corporations are much more powerful than individual people in the accumulation of money. And corporations have gained this power through judicial fiat. Just as our last election, many of us feel, was judicial fiat, when the two candidates were vying for office, one received more in the popular vote, but by judicial fiat, there was one declared a winner. That same thing has happened as far as corporations are concerned over time in the different interpretations of the amendments by judicial fiat. They've gained free speech, which gives them the power to advertise in vast medias, much more than individual people, and certainly property is the main issue. And now globalization is on everyone's mind. So a corporation has the ability to join itself to other corporations and other corporations, and we have multinational corporations with enormous power worldwide because of the fact that we have granted these powers to them through our judicial system.
Are they using their power in a way that is irresponsible? Is that the complaint?
I guess I'd like to agree with my colleagues that their power is used irresponsibly, and because it's been amassed illegitimately. Because you can take the instance where, because corporations are persons, they've got the status of a natural person as a living person, they have the right to free speech, which is in the First Amendment. And then the fact that money has been equated to speech, which means that an ordinary person like you and me would only have one vote in any election, and they would have several votes. So that makes the whole democratic process and the whole electoral process illegitimate or insignificant, or undermining the democracy that the country so is proud of.
If I can just add to that. Yeah. But part of the challenge that people have in thinking about this, and the way that you frame the question is useful. People do good things as employees of corporations. They do that every day by the millions in this country. People also do very bad things as employees of corporations. And the issue of what we're focusing on is not whether they're good corporations or bad corporations. The thing that we're focusing on is that because of the ways they've accumulated these rights, corporations govern us. And a benign dictator is still a dictator. A corporate governance is still corporate governance, and it's not democracy. We want to live in a democratic country, and we don't, and we are very eager to find out what that would be like. So that's the core of the issue.
Can you, Molly, explain more in depth how we don't have a democracy? How have corporations co-opted the government?
If you use the definition that that democracy is rule by the people, and I make that distinction because some people use the definition that majority rule is democracy, and I don't find that to be a very effective way to think about it. If democracy is ruled by the people, if the people who are affected by decisions have an equal opportunity to participate in the making of those decisions, then we can say that we're living in a democratic society. We don't have that opportunity. We get to vote in elections from time to time, and most people think that voting means we live in a democracy, but the choices that we get to make have already been figured out by somebody else who has a lot more power than us. The participation that we have in our workplaces is clearly not democratic, and it even goes beyond the concept of being able to form unions, which of course is very important. The estimate is that as many as 10,000 people lose their jobs every year in this country because of an attempt to form a union, and that's an important part of it. But it goes even deeper than that, which is simply having routine ability to participate in what work needs to get done and how you're going to do it and who is going to do it. And we simply don't have that. Those decisions are made by an elite few. Most of us are co-opted into it, are colonized into believing that that's a perfectly acceptable lifestyle because we have many material goods, but those are not the same thing as living in a democracy.
And you are tuned to 96.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm speaking with Molly Morgan, Nachi Lala Nkombo, Nadine Wilson, all three from Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, WILF. I guess it seems like the core of the problem, as you were just pointing out, Molly, is that we don't have near as much rights as corporations or near as much power, and the amount of money and influence they have really kind of dictates what type of government we have, and they have basically, as you've described, it sounds to me as though we are governed by corporations and their power. Is that an accurate conclusion to make?
Yeah, we'd like to stress the point that John Q. Public thinks he's a citizen. He is a citizen, and if he votes, he's performing one of his duties and responsibilities and freedoms to do so in a democracy. But we are being turned every day into John Consumer, in that we're bombarded continually by advertisements to buy this, buy that, and our government has turned into a big business promoting entity. We must keep the businesses functioning, and this in turn enables government people to feel the importance of the corporate power in that it provides jobs. We'd like to see a bit more democracy in the saying of what the corporations do on our airways and what they publicize in our papers and magazines.
As far as the electoral process goes, what kind of influence, and any one of you can answer this question, it's not particularly directed at anybody, but what kind of influence do they have? What kind of influence do corporations, people with money and power, and it's usually corporations, have on government? Can you give a description, an explanation, kind of specifically of how they influence the electoral process?
Corporations influence the electoral process in profound and deep ways, and here are a few of them. In the 1970s, 76, there were some Supreme Court decisions that equated money with speech, and as long as these corporate persons had First Amendment rights, that meant that they could basically spend as much money as they wanted by contributing to political candidates and political parties. So they dump an enormous amount of money, not only through that process, but of course spend hundreds of millions of dollars every year lobbying Congress, Sacramento, and even at a local level. I live in San Diego, and developers are very, very powerful in our local politics there, which is one of the reasons that San Diego is rapidly turning into LA. And so we see this at all levels, that people who have a lot of money are able to influence elected officials because they are the ones that have often the loudest voices in our elected bodies. There's another way that it happens, and that has been the usurpation of our public goods. The airwaves, for example, belong to the public, and our elected officials have given them away largely so that we have giant for-profit corporations that control the air, TV, radio, and our print media. And so they shape messages that are presented to people as though they're a complete story about the possibilities of living in both your personal life, your work life, your public life. And so all of these public opportunities for people to talk with each other, share ideas, decide how they want to allocate resources, how, what kind of economies they want to build, are taken away from us because large corporations use the public opportunities that we have that exist today for personal gain.
This is a problem, obviously, that we don't have a democracy, that people with money and corporations specifically control our government to the point where they are practically our government. What can people do to strip corporations of their personhood and the fact that they have at least as many rights, but I've heard more than we as individuals do? What can we do? How can we go about changing this? What kind of effect would it have if we were successful in such a thing?
I think that the biggest challenge is believing that we have the power to do this. We have been so colonized by the saturation of corporate messages that it is difficult, I think, for most people to really believe what it means to be a citizen, what it means to take control over the communities that we want to live in, and that we are sovereign and what that means to be sovereign. A lot of what we're seeing in communities is resistance in the form of simply not thinking that they can do it, or simply not being able to imagine even. The extent of colonization is so great that we can't even imagine what alternative societies would look like. So my belief is that that's the first hurdle that we need to overcome, is to help people understand what democracy is, what that is compared to what we live in now, and how we can move forward. Some of the things that would change if we eliminated corporate personhood include, as I mentioned before, we could, without personhood rights and without this right of free speech, corporations could instantly be eliminated from our entire political process, which would change things pretty profoundly in a pretty short order. We could demand that we have the right to access corporate property so that we can find out if they're destroying our air, land, and water, if they're abusing workers, and instruct corporations as to how we want them to serve society rather than simply accepting the things that they tell us are what we need to do. Corporate messaging likes to tell us that the economy is the most important thing in our world, and in most media information, the news is not complete without the latest on the Dow Jones Industrials and the NASDAQ numbers. And the truth of the matter is the economy is important, but the economy should serve what the people decide is what kind of society they want to live in. So we've gotten into an upside down situation. And getting people to talk about political issues, not in the realm that many people think about, but just how do we want to live our day-to-day lives? How do we want to allocate our resources? How do we take care of the earth? How do we take care of all of the people on it, as well as all the other living creatures, and live respectfully in holistic communities, sustainable communities? Those are issues that are facing all of us on a day-to-day basis. And right now, most of our public opportunities to talk about those things effectively don't exist or have been so corrupted that they have become ineffective.
And that's one reason we appreciate having the opportunity to talk with you on this. Nachilala is from Zambia. Have you had any experience with corporate rule in your country that you'd like to talk about?
I'd like to say that the American people are lucky to have an organization here that's ready to work with them to challenge corporate rule. Because in my country, the corporations have got so much power that we can only wish for a change in the world economic order for things to change for us. So I'd encourage all Americans and everyone who's listening to take time to think about challenging corporate personhood, because it's the missing link between democracy and the life that you're subjected to now.
And Nachi Lala, the corporations that you're saying have such an incredible amount of power in your country, are they American corporations? Are they U.S. owned?
The corporations that I'm talking about are from all over the first world. We've got corporations from Europe, we've got corporations from here, and we've got corporations from South Africa.
I'd like to suggest that Nachi Lala also talk about the somewhat invisible corporations, which is the entire financial and banking community, and the impact that institutions like the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank are having on countries like hers.
I would like to say that the impact that institutions, international institutions like IMF and World Bank have had on my country is that they've pushed for policies that have empowered corporations to the disadvantage of the local businessmen, such that so many businesses, local businesses, have closed down. Right now, we only have about 400,000 people out of a population of 10 million that are formally employed, that are securely employed. So it's really something that has just worked out to the advantage of the corporations, to the disadvantage of the people. And because we are so dependent on the IMF and the World Bank loans, there's very little power that a Zambian national has in that case, in comparison to an American national, that you can identify the root of this corporate power within your community, and you've got the chance to challenge it. And if that could be challenged here, it would have positive spillover effects all over the world.
And that's all the time we have for this week's program. Thanks for listening. The Weekly Freak Show is produced live in the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, and can also be heard on Suppressed Truths on KZUU 90.7 FM in Pullman, Washington. The interviews featured in this program are only a sample of the fine shows each week on Freak Radio. To hear it all, 24 hours a day, listen online at www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. For questions and comments, send email to FRSC@microradio.net. That's FRSC@microradio.net, or snail mail to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Or call area code 831-427-4523. That's 831-427-4523. Thanks to the A-Infos Radio Project for distribution. Our theme music was arranged and performed by Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra. For Old Lady Scararms and everyone here at Freak Radio, my name's the V-Man, and that's a wrap.